Duhitrihi daughters. Dasha Uttara. 10 more than. Shatam. 100. Pitri. Like the father. Matri. And mother. Yashashkarahi. Glorified. Shila. Good behavior. Odarya. Magnanimity. Guna. Good qualities. Upetaha. Possessed of. Paranjanyaha. A daughters of Paranjana. Prajapati. O Prajapati. Translation, O Prajapati, King Prachidibharhishat. In this way, King Paranjana also begot 110 daughters. All of these were equally glorified like the father and mother. Their behavior was gentle, and they possess magnanimity and other good qualities. You can repeat, O Prajapati, King Prachidibharhishat. In this way, King Paranjana also begot 110 daughters. All of these were equally glorified like the father and mother. Their behavior was gentle. And they possessed magnanimity and other good qualities. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay? Children begotten under the rules and regulations of the scriptures generally become as good as the father and mother. But children born illegitimately mainly become Varna Sankara. The Varna Sankara population is irresponsible to the family, community, and even to themselves. Formerly, the Varna Sankara population was checked by the observation of the reformatory method called Garbhagara Sankara, a child-begetting religious ceremony. In this verse, we find that although King Paranjana had begotten so many children, they were not Varna Sankara. All of them were good, well-behaved children, and they had good qualities like their father and mother. Even though we may produce many good children, our desire for sex that is beyond the prescribed method is to be considered sinful. Too much enjoyment of any of the senses, not only sex, results in sinful activities. Therefore, one has to become a Sami or Gosami at the end of his life. One may beget children up to the age of 50, but after 50, one must stop begetting children and should accept the Vanaprastha order. In this way, he must leave home and then become a sannyasi. A sannyasi's title is Sami or Gosami, which means that he completely refrains from sense enjoyment. One should not accept the sannyas order whimsically. He must be fully confident that he can restrain his desires for sense gratification. King Paranjana's family life was, of course, very happy. As mentioned in these verses, he begot 1,100 sons and 110 daughters. Everyone desires to have more sons than daughters, and since the number of daughters was less than the number of sons, it appears that King Paranjana's family life was very comfortable and pleasing. So, Dihitrir Dasharot Dashotara Shatam Apitri Matri Yashashkarahi Shilaudarya Ganopeta Puranjanja Prachapate. So, Umagarata Vidanda Shah Garanjana Shlakaya Jakshur Meditam Yena Tuzmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Of course, there's many topics touched upon here. And the primary topic is having good progeny. Of course, what determines the type of soul that comes into a mother's womb is the consciousness, basically the consciousness of the parents. It attracts a particular type of living entity. That's why the Garbhadan Sanskara, you know, Sanskara means reformatory practice, is effective because it changes one's consciousness. When you do a samskara, let's talk about a samskara. Samskara means a formatory practice. But the first thing in performing any samskara, I was recently, just to give an example, I was recently at a samskara for a lady who was about to give birth. It's called the safe delivery samskara. The first thing that you do during this any samskara is called the sankalpa. The sankalpa basically is saying what you're going to do. Not only what you're going to do, but where you are in terms of the geographical location, the time, all these different things are mentioned, the cycle, the moon, etc. So it establishes your determination, basically. The sankalpa establishes your determination, you know, why you're doing what you're doing. Without the sankalpa, it would simply be a ritual. In other words, you're doing a ritual, but you're not really realizing why you're doing a particular ritual. Just like we have many rituals in the Krishna conscious movements, some of our rituals are directly bhakti and some of them are supportive of bhakti. Directly would be the chanting of the Lord's holy names. It's not just a ritual, but it is also a ritual. Ritual means something you do, basically. It's not simply supportive of bhakti, it is bhakti. But we have other things we do, such as the type of RT ceremony we perform, or our hairstyle, or waking up early at a certain time in the morning that are supportive. They're rituals that are supportive of bhakti. Everyone understands the difference? There's some rituals that are directly bhakti, and some rituals that are supportive of bhakti. However, without a sankalpa, or an understanding why we're doing the ritual, whether it's supportive of bhakti or whether it is directly bhakti, then we get into this ritualistic consciousness and we become inattentive while we're performing our rituals. And so this inattention is called, according to Rupa Goswami, niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means to do your rituals, to do your whatever you're doing, and without really a consciousness of why you're doing it. And if you do it like that, then what happens is you don't develop a taste for hearing and chanting. You know, sometimes people ask, you know, why don't I have a taste for hearing and chanting about the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because you're performing things. There's many other reasons, too, like offenses, but in this particular context, this particular discussion, is you're doing things ritualistically. You're not thinking of what you're doing while you're doing it. You're not focused. You know what? And especially the chanting. Especially with the chanting. While we're chanting, the chanting, of course, is a prayer to engage ourselves in Radha and Krishna's service. We should be begging Krishna for something while we're chanting. Asking Krishna for something. Because it's described, nama chintamani. The holy names are desire. It's like a stone, chintamani stone, like a jewel, desired stone, like you have in the spiritual world, the kalpa vrikshas. The kalpa vrikshas are the desired trees. And everybody, when they go to, not everybody, but most people, when they go to Goloka Vrindavan and they touch the trees, they make a wish. It's like the spiritual Aladdin's lamp, but no genie comes out, obviously. Krishna comes out. But usually you rub the tree and you make a wish. So, in the same way, we're chanting Krishna's names and we're sort of rubbing the name. And we're supposed to make a wish. We're supposed to ask for something. We're supposed to not only ask for something, we're supposed to beg for something. Like it's described by Srila Rupa Goswami, the price of pure devotional service is lalyam, is greed. Or as Prabhupada sometimes translated that word, tears, you know, crying. I want this. You want something. So in other words, it's the consciousness that determines the effectiveness of a performance of a particular ceremony, whether it's chanting the holy names or one of the samskaras that are mentioned here. So the sankalpa comes first. So as we mentioned before, there's when we were at this ceremony for safe delivery, the sankalpa was stated, we're here at this particular date, this particular place, and we're praying that so-and-so will have a safe delivery of their child. The pregnant lady will have a safe delivery of the child. So as far as the Garbhadhan Sanskara, there is an intention. And the intention, of course, can be one of many. It's not that everybody who performs the Garbhadhan Sanskara is asking for a good devotee. Some people are asking for a good materialist, like King Puranjana here. He certainly wasn't interested in having, like, pure devotees as children. That wasn't his intention. Although sometimes you get pure devotees as your child, even if it's not your intention. Just like the story of Lord Buddha, his parents were not interested in getting... it's an interesting story. They were not interested in getting a renunciate as a son. They were interested in getting someone who would become a king. Peaceful. Shanti. Om Shanti. So when I believe her name, yeah, Mahamaya was the name of Buddha's mother. So when she was pregnant, they had the astrologers and fortune tellers come and to ascertain what type of child she would have. And so they said, well, either he'll be a great king or he'll free the whole world from suffering. You know, there was a... So she was thinking, forget about the world, I want him to be a king. It's interesting. And the parents tried their best after he was born to prevent him from becoming a great self-realized soul. They tried to shield him from the realities of life, from birth, death, disease, and old age. They kept him encapsulated in the castle. But eventually he went out and he saw that people do die. In fact, his mother died when he was a little baby. The story of Buddha, any of you know that. He was raised by some other lady other than his mother because his mother died shortly after his birth. So the point is the parents tried to prevent him from fulfilling his destiny. And when he discovered there was disease, there was birth, old age and sickness, all these other things, then he basically renounced everything. I mean, his parents even tried to prevent him by giving him a very beautiful wife. And he just gave up everything. He just went to the hills. So that was his nature. All right. So the Garbhadhan Sanskara is meant to keep the parents' consciousness at a certain point so they get the type of child that they want. Because that consciousness attracts a particular type of soul. So King Puranjana, he was basically interested in enjoying. So he got the type of children that would help him with enjoyment. And as we hear in the later verses, the type of children that help you with your enjoyment are children that have children. What does that mean? Grandchildren. Because how can you enjoy your children? I mean, enjoying your children is one thing up to the time they're about 8 years old. They're real cute and adorable. That you can pinch their cheek. My mother still tries to pinch my cheek, and I'm 62 years old. It's not enjoyable for me, but for her, it's some enjoyment. So the parents in the materialistic situation, such as mentioned here, they want to enjoy by having their children become sex enjoyers too. In other words, produce babies. So the whole idea is to utilize the children for their enjoyment. And the children, attachment to the children is also attachment to sex life. And that was brought up in one conversation Prabhupada had with one older gentleman. Prabhupada was telling the older gentleman, you have to give up sex life. And the older gentleman said, I've given it up. You know, I'm not doing it anymore. You know, I'm just celibate. And Prabhupada said, you're attached to the byproducts of sex. You know, in other words, family. You're attached to the byproducts. And the man, I don't know what happened, whether he surrendered or whatever, but that was the conversation. It's there in Prabhupada's conversations. You can hear it or read about it. So basically, that was what King Puranjana was planning to enjoy. Therefore, we have the statement here, which may be a little painful for some of you ladies, that everyone desires to have more sons than daughters. I mean, how do you ladies feel when you hear that? I mean, I just want to know. And does anyone feel like, you feel okay? If I was a lady, I would think, ooh, it's so painful. Why are sons more valuable than daughters? Well, anyone feel any pain when they hear that? I mean, if it was stated in the purport that he had 1,100 daughters and 110 sons, and everyone wants to have more daughters than sons, I would feel pain. I mean, just being honest about the whole thing. Maybe you're all not honest. So why is it stated like that? And so we have to understand the specific context, because basically, if people want to enjoy through their sons and daughters, if people want to enjoy, then it's better to have more sons than daughters. You understand? Why? Because daughters are somewhat problematic. Not that we have any problem with daughters, but problematic because you've got to worry about their marriages. You've got to pay for their marriages. You know, in the Vedic system, father of the girl has to pay for the marriages. He's an anxiety. You know, when the Prabhupada said, when the girl reaches puberty, the father's in great anxiety about protecting the girl, because there's so many men out there who are attempting to seduce her with sweet romantic words. All the man has to do is say, your teeth are like stars, your eyes are like whatever they are, and you're like the whatever. Anyway, I don't know these things. I'm a sannyasi. But anyway, you're like the apple of my eye, the cherry of my heart. I can't do it well. So if you want to hear real romantic stuff, you read the Goswami literatures about Radha and Krishna. Just like we did the recitation of Lalita Madhava, and it's so romantic what Krishna is saying to Radharani and Radharani is saying to Krishna. It's just like, wow. This is the most romantic literature ever. So anyway, so the father is very concerned. And then also, after going through all that trouble to raise his daughter, get her married, pay for the marriage. I mean, I have one friend who did a marriage. It cost him $50,000 to do the marriage. That sounds like a lot, but in India, that's very common, isn't it? I mean, they'll mortgage the house, sell their kidneys, whatever they have to do to pay for the daughter's marriage. I mean, this the famous steel magnate, Mittal, he spent like $10 million for his daughter's marriage. Imagine $10 million? And it's over in one day. So, you know, it's a big thing. Like when people in India, let's say they're here in America, they have to get their daughter married, they fly to India to buy the Mangal Sutra, they fly to India, you know, they get the outfit, spending thousands of dollars. So it's a big thing. But then, after it's all over, I mean, the marriages are very interesting, too, because they even have, in certain part of India, they have one ceremony called the Priti Bhoj. I don't know if you ever heard about that. It's in northern India. That means a love feast. It's a day before the marriage in which, anyway, everyone eats a lot, but the women generally come to display their outfits, their new outfits to each other. And they're just looking, you know, here's your new sari, here's your jewelry. See that? You know, so it's a special day. And the men are all just talking business anyway during the whole thing. So anyway, so you go to all that trouble, but if you have a daughter, you lose her when she gets married. She goes to live with her husband's family. So a lot of trouble, nothing to show for it. Right? A lot of trouble. So I'm trying to explain why in this particular context it's better to have sons than daughters. And also, traditionally, in the traditional Brahminical context, it's the son who does the pinda ceremony for the parents. Pinda means saves the parents from hell. That's why he's called Putra. I mean, a female for that is putri. Basically, a person or a son or daughter who saves the father from father or mother from hell. So therefore, that's why in this context it's better to have sons than daughters. You got it? So it's not a discrimination thinking that daughters or girls are horrible and men are good. It's not, and that's not a chauvinistic statement. It's a practical statement. You know, obviously, if you're going to raise people, you want to get some benefit from them after you've raised them. Right? Practical, isn't it? You don't want to just like kiss them goodbye and that's it. You want to have the benefit. Anyway, like Sita Devi, for example, when she got married, she went to join, of course, she went with Lord Ram. And then she joined the Lord Ram's family instead of her father's family. So this is practical. So therefore, that statement is there. So anyway, so another thing about having more sons than daughters, Prabhupada said this. I'm not just speculating about these things. He said, if the man is strong, then he'll have more sons than daughters. And if the woman is stronger than the man, then they'll have more daughters than sons. And so one of the problems nowadays is because people engage in so much illicit sex life, the men have become very weak. And so, anyway, so we found this in the early days of the movement. Just a little commentary. Like Prabhupada commented that all you devotees are just having daughters. Prabhupada was a little disappointed. I mean, it's there in the letters. I'm not just making this up. Prabhupada was disappointed. He said, you know, he said, when I saw the lady, how big she was, I thought it was going to be a son. But then it became a daughter. He said, aren't you capable of having sons? He said, I'm paraphrasing what Prabhupada said. Because people, before they joined the movement, they had had so much illicit sex there. That's why they weren't having as many sons as daughters. Of course, from a spiritual perspective, then girls are as good as boys. And Prabhupada said that if a lady is Krishna conscious, then her association is desired because she can liberate someone or bring someone back to God, that she can preach. In fact, in many cases, we see the ladies preach as much or more than the men. Distributing books and doing preaching like that. So there's no negative to being in a female body. It's no negative. You can do just as much service as a man can because Krishna consciousness is transcendental. However, in this context here that we're talking about is not Krishna. It's not a Krishna conscious context we're talking about with Paranjana. It's someone who's trying to enjoy. Try to understand the difference here. Someone who's trying to enjoy. And so it's interesting in the beginning of this particular verse that that King Prachinna Bharishat is addressed as O Prajapati. Because he's addressed as O Prajapati because he's being compared with King Paranjana. You understand? This whole story is a metaphorical story, obviously. It's not that there is actually a person named King Paranjana. It's a story being told to King Prachinna Bharishat because King Prachinna Bharishat, in essence, is King Paranjana. And he wouldn't have been able to take direct preaching by Narada Muni. If Narada Muni said, hey, you're in Maya, you know, all you're interested in is begetting children and enjoying your grandchildren and the products of sex life, maitunya, you know, products of sex life, King Prachinna Bharishat would have rejected this instruction. As it says, Upadesho Himorkanam Prakopayana Shantaye, that if someone is engaged in illusion or someone is in illusion, if you give them good instruction, they'll become angry. So instruction has to be given with great caution or great care when we're dealing with people. Not only with King Prachinna Bharishat, but when we're dealing with anyone, dealing with other devotees or we're dealing with the public, we have to be very careful how we present Krishna consciousness. In fact, if we're not careful, we're committing that offense on chanting preaching the glories of the Lord or preaching something that people are not ready to hear. So we have to really be expert in presenting Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. Just like I was in Sydney, and we did this program at the yoga center there, Govinda's, and we did this past life regression seminar, and it's a very interesting scenario they have at this Govinda's. I'm not suggesting that we do that here, but what it is they actually have a movie theater on the top floor. Some of you can look at it in the internet, you can see. They have a movie theater on the top floor, and in the movie theater they have like couches, not only seats that the people sit on, they're like couches. You lie down and you watch the movie, maybe even with your girlfriend sometimes. And then they have a vegetarian restaurant on the floor below that. And then they have sort of a yoga place on the first floor. So they have like three floors of things going on. So very expert bridge preaching they do there. So you may say, well, it's Maya. They're showing movies. Or they're not having a standard ISKCON program there. Well, they've made so many nice Western devotees there over the last few years. In fact, they have their own place in Vrindavan where they send people to get trained up in Krishna consciousness, and now they're getting another place in Mayapur to train people up to attend the Bhakti Shastri classes there. So they're making really, really nice devotees who are educated, devotees who have a place in society, and they're bringing them to Krishna consciousness because they're understanding the principle. The person in charge, his name is Pratapana. And fortunately, he has a wife who makes a lot of money to support the whole program. Her name is Jai Shri. Interesting. And she runs all these fashion shows, not shows, shops all around Sydney, selling the latest handbags. I'm not interested in handbags. But anyway, latest handbags and latest dresses or whatever that she imports from India and from other places like that. So it's very interesting that the presentation of Krishna consciousness is not direct, although they're not hiding the fact. I mean, they have Prabhupada's books there. But it's an indirect preaching of Krishna consciousness, yet they're so successful, in fact, more successful than the Sydney Temple. The Sydney Temple has been more a place for people who are already Krishna conscious or people who are from India who already know the culture there. And so that Sydney Temple doesn't make any new devotees, basically, except amongst the congregation from India who are already acquainted with Krishna consciousness, whereas this other place is making all the new devotees, which is interesting. So when preaching Krishna consciousness, you have to use metaphors, you have to be indirect. Yeah, whereas Prabhupada used this particular statement, he said, you have to go in like a pin and out like a plow. So this is what Narada Muni is doing here with King Prachinabharishat. He's being very indirect. He's just telling him an interesting story. And at the end, King Prachinabharishat gets the whole point and he becomes Krishna conscious and gives up his attachment to enjoying the material world. So for us, let's get back to the point for us, we already know these points. So how do we give up our attachment to this material world? This is a very good point. We give up our attachment to the material world by devotion to Krishna. Not simply being attached to Krishna consciousness, but by love for Krishna. There's a difference between love and attachment. All right, so we talk about the different stages in devotional service. Like, ashakti means attachment, but prema means love. So, of course, ashakti is an intermediate stage, just like you have all these intermediate stages in the progress of devotional service. Ado, shradatata, sadhu sangota, vajanakriya, and getting rid of the anarthas, then nishta, then ruchi, and then ashakti, and bhava, and prema. So in the beginning stage, of course, we want to have enjoyment in the name of Krishna consciousness. But what Krishna does, and I've seen this, is very, very interesting. He may take away our sense of enjoyment of Krishna consciousness so that we understand that the ultimate goal is not the enjoyment of Krishna consciousness, but the love of Krishna. So sometimes we wonder, like when we first joined the movement, you know, chanting would put us in so much ecstasy, we'd roll on the ground and cry. And nowadays, we're just Hare Krishna. It's a little dry. You know, trying to focus the mind, it's a little dry. So my realization is, Krishna is forcing us to go for something higher than just the enjoyment of chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna is forcing us to just go for the point of love. That is to give Krishna pleasure. That is love. Love means to give the object of love happiness or enjoyment or pleasure. So we have to pray for that. If we're not experiencing ecstasy, you know, we've actually... Krishna's taken away for one reason or other. We should examine the reason why and then ultimately understand that we should be chanting with the idea of developing pure love for Krishna, becoming a servant of Krishna. So, anyway, so there's different aspects or different type of consciousness that one has to cultivate depending on the stage of devotional service they're at. And if we're going for love, then automatically... other things, even more so than just the higher taste, automatically the attachment to this world disappears. Because even with a higher taste, you still have some taste for the other things, you understand? You know, we have a higher taste. Well, I'm enjoying Krishna consciousness, but, you know, I also enjoy the other things too. But with love, that's complete focus. When you simply desire, like the love of a mother, she's so much focused on the happiness or the welfare of her children, that there's no room for anything else. So when you love Krishna, there is no room for anything else. You understand? No room. It's just like Prabhupada said, when you have the cup full of milk, then there's no room for ink. You know, Prabhupada used the milk and ink example. So we should pray for that. If we really want to get detached from this world, we should pray not simply to have a taste, but actually to love Krishna in a completely unmotivated way. And then all the desires will go away. We don't have to negate the desires. We don't have to just like try to close our eyes every time we have a desire. We see something that's desirable. Or even like Vilva Mangal Thakur, put our eyes out. You know, we have the devotees like poking their eyes out. Although we'd have an ashram full of blind people, if we use that technique, then, you know, if someone would come to the temple, we'd all have seen eye dogs. So we have to just pray for love, pure unmotivated love for Radha and Krishna. And if we do that, then what all the other desires for this world, whether to enjoy as Paranjana is enjoying here with a sex life and the products of sex life and the byproducts of sex life or enjoying the tongue. Because Prabhupada also said here, too much enjoyment of any of the senses, not only sex, results in sinful activities. Any of the senses. So anyway, so that's the cure. Babosho Shotra Mano Birvat. And that the way one achieves that love is by hearing more and more about Krishna. And appreciation and that's how you love someone. Just like yesterday, I was listening to the description of the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's love for Sanatan Goswami. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was forcibly embracing Sanatan Goswami, even though Sanatan Goswami had all these running sores all over his body. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatan Goswami in Haridas Thakur, he said, "You are like my children." So, in other words, a mother who loves her children doesn't consider, you know, whether the child has dirty diapers or not, basically, he was saying. Because, you know, a mother thinks that the stool in the child is like sandalwood pulp. It's a typical example. Don't argue with me about it. Prabhupada said it. So, so I was hearing that and then just appreciating how much Krishna loves us, and Lord Chaitanya loves us, and then my love for Lord Chaitanya, increased to a certain degree. I'm not saying I love Lord Chaitanya, but anyway, increased. So it's overwhelming just thinking about that. So when you hear about the Lord's loving exchanges, then also you develop love for the Lord, and love for Krishna, love for Lord Chaitanya. And that really helps us overcome all obstacles in devotional service, that love, which is even higher than a higher taste or higher than any other platform in Krishna. So we should pray for that. So any questions or comments? We got about 1 minute left. Yes?
I said we should pray for
pure love. Yeah.
So whatever is really there in our heart, to be open about that and also to pray for that. So
yeah.
In the beginning stages, there are so many other things. There are so many immediate
needs.
Yeah. So.
No, we're honest with Krishna, and we're praying for pure love and revealing to Krishna. But I also have all these other things, too, which is, it's important to be honest with Krishna. But to also pray for pure love at the same time. That, I know the goal is pure love. Please help me overcome all these things and come to the point of pure love as soon as possible. Yeah, because that's the only thing that will satisfy the self. The Atma superseded. The other things won't satisfy us. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we overcome Niyam Agraha by keeping that goal focused in our minds. That was the point I was making with the samskaras. That, what is your sankalpa? So when I'm chanting, I try to pray and beg Krishna for something. And then Krishna reciprocates. And sometimes I'm praying for someone's welfare, too. Sometimes I'm praying for some disciple who's deviated from Krishna consciousness. And I'm praying for them, Krishna, do this. You can actually have a conversation with Krishna. Krishna's a person. I realize that, like with deity, you can actually have a conversation. Just like that devotee was talking to Sakshi Gopal, and Gopal walked all the way across India. He even argued with Krishna. You may say, Krishna, sometimes I do that. I mean, just to be honest, why don't I argue? But I say, Krishna, please save this person. And Krishna says, the person doesn't want to be Krishna conscious. And I say, I don't care. I want you to save him anyway. So you have this conversation. You can have a conversation with the deities. I mean, respectfully, obviously. Not that we, become disrespectful. But you have a conversation with the holy names. It's a person. The holy name is a person. The deities are persons. You can talk to them. You can reveal your mind. You can beseech them. You understand? So we're approaching Krishna consciousness in a very impersonal way. That's our problem, rather than a personal way. It's just a very ritualistic way. But we're meant to talk to Krishna, talk to the holy name, and